Welcome back for 2017's final episode of Legal Marketing Radio. Before we get started, we just want to wish you a happy holidays. We hope you had a Merry Christmas or a Merry whatever holiday you choose to celebrate, and we hope the new year gets you started off right. So if you've been following this podcast, you know that 2017 was the first year of Legal Marketing Radio, and I think we made some pretty great strides since we got started back in February. In particular, I think we really upped the overall quality of the audio and the production, and we've kind of got our format and approach down now. So for next year, what we're planning to focus on is getting more special guests from outside of LaFleur to join us. So expect to see more of that in the coming months, starting right off with our first episode in January. Now to close out 2017, I decided our last episode of the year should focus on conversions. It kind of seemed appropriate to me since we're concluding our journey through the year, and a conversion is kind of the end of a client's journey, or at least their journey towards signing on with your firm, anyway. And after all, at the end of the day, conversions are what really matter, right? Because they get you the clients and the cases that your firm needs. So this week, we're going to delve into how you can optimize your content and your design for more conversions. To do that, we're going to sit down with our resident analytics investigator and all-around master of all things data-oriented, Dave Vandewa. Now, as Dave and I tend to do, we really got into our discussion, and this ended up being one of our longer episodes to date. So we're going to jump in and get started in just a second. Before we do, though, just a quick reminder in case this is your first episode as a listener and you're not already familiar with LaFleur. LaFleur is your full-service digital marketing partner, and we work with law firms across the country to grow their businesses and develop their brands. To learn more about us, just check out our website at lafleur.marketing. That's LAFLEUR.marketing. Okay, enough introduction. Let's get started and get talking about how to optimize for conversions in this week's episode of Legal Marketing Radio. Okay, so here on the podcast with us this week to close out 2017, we have maybe our most iconic guest on this, on this podcast. It's Dave Vandewa, our content director. How you doing, Dave?
Good, good. How are you, Steven?
Good, I'm doing great. Are you feeling the holiday spirit?
No, I really don't like the holidays.
I didn't think you were. It's always tough for us, too, because it's a time of kind of hectic. We try to clear out our work for the end of the year, and there's always a lot to do. So, but we're enjoying it. Okay, so this week, what we want to talk about, this episode idea kind of stemmed from some conversations that Dave and I had, and lately we've just had conversions on the brain, it seems. We've gotten into a lot of conversations about, you know, what types of pages convert best, how do we make pages and blog posts and other content that encourage conversions. Obviously, that's something, you know, as a legal marketing agency that is always on mind, but it's just been especially top of mind lately. So I thought we'd dive into it here on the podcast and kind of help our listeners through, you know, some of the things we've been thinking about and kind of let them know what they can gain from some of the insights we've had. So one of the first things I wanted to talk about is when we started, you know, talking about this, one of the first things we said was, okay, we've got to look at our current content and find out what type of pages convert best. And Dave being our kind of resident analytics, you know, digging statistics reporting guy, went right to it. So Dave, when we started talking about that, what did you generally find?
Yeah. So there's a pretty big, there's like an ecosystem of content, right? And so what pages convert the best, it tends to be pages that are about your services. So, you know, your practice area pages, if you're an attorney, for us at LaFleur, it's our service pages that tend to convert really well. Our homepage converts really well. A lot of homepages for lawyers convert really well. And even some about pages. So when someone reads about an attorney's bio on their website or about the firm, then those are high converting pages. And we think of those pages kind of as the core, your core site content, right? Your homepage, your about pages, and your service area pages. And, you know, it makes sense that those are the pages that are going to convert the best. They're going to be where you push your value proposition and say, this is why you should hire us. Whereas your blogs don't necessarily convert very well, usually, unless you're looking at different types of conversions. Like if you're looking at newsletter subscriptions, your blog is going to go bonkers.
Right, that's true. We have to define a conversion. In this case, I think we're thinking about, you know, a form fill to schedule a consultation, yeah, or something that's going to get you a client.
Yeah, we're looking at like leads, like hot leads.
Hot leads, yeah. But that's true. You know, there's other ways to measure. And if signing up for an email campaign blogs might, you know, do better at that. But in terms of, you know, getting a client, and that makes sense too. I mean, I may be looking for legal info, but if I, you know, find an article about what I want, that doesn't mean that I'm necessarily going to be like, oh, I'll just sign up for this law firm. You know, I mean, I'm going to have to know more about them. So the idea is probably to hook someone. So, okay. Based on that info, I mean, if those pages, the core content pages, serve as the biggest conversion drivers, then how do we want to think about blog content? Obviously, you know, from an SEO standpoint, we're targeting a lot of long tail keywords with blog content. We're trying to get people who are searching for legal advice or, you know, information about a particular topic. But then should the goal of that blog post, more so than to get them to pick up the phone and call, should it be to direct people to some of these other core content, these practice area pages and things?
Yeah, you really have to think of it like, you know, the traditional model is like a funnel. And with blog articles, you write about a wide variety of topics, and that sort of casts your net out, a really big net out. And the more blog posts you can write about, more topics you can write about, the bigger your net is to pull in new people, to build, pull in potential leads. And once they get on the blog, they're going to learn more information, and they're either going to qualify or disqualify themselves as hot leads, right? Because if someone lands on your page and says, "Nah, this is interesting to me," and they leave, then they probably don't need your services, mm-hmm. and there's no amount of copy that's going to convince them that they do. But if the topic is really relevant to them, then what they'll do is they will hopefully either contact your firm or they will funnel themselves to a core site page where you're pushing your value prop even further and you're making a real definitive call to action.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so one thing I've noticed just viewing a lot of attorney websites, obviously we look at them all the time, and I see a lot of attorney websites that have practice area pages that are pretty short and kind of cursory. And it makes me think that, you know, I mean, being concise is a good thing, but if these are your kind of, you know, your cornerstone pages for converting along with your About Us pages and things like that, it makes me think that that's probably not the best idea, that you need to flesh those out a little more.
Yeah, I think structure plays a part in that too. This is something that we've recently been working on with one of our clients. Kind of, they had a lot of old site content, and we've been redoing it kind of on a monthly basis. And what we've done is we've taken their like main value prop and call to action, putting it above the fold or as close to above the fold as possible. That's, you know, what you see when you first open a window in a browser. And so what we do there is we say, you know, we handle these cases, we're really good at it, and you should call us. Here's how. And we say that really quickly and concisely at the very beginning of the page. And then we also then, for SEO purposes and for, you know, user experience, we also then below that have a bunch more information about that specific practice area. So if we're talking about a personal injury attorney and they handle car accident cases, that's their bread and butter, we might have more information about how many car accidents there are in their state, like what the common injuries are from car accidents, any of that really big general information that might be useful to somebody who's been in a car accident as well. And so then you're kind of doing both. You've got this really quick value prop that's going to encourage conversion structurally at the top of the page. And then, you know, so people, it's, so it's easy. It's easy to convert. That's the really important thing. And then there's more information for people who want to read more or for SEO purposes, where Google says, hey, this is a really good piece of content. And you want it to be good because you're linking from your blog to that practice area page. So that practice area page might even rank better than your homepage for certain keywords. Mm-hmm. You know, because if someone types in, you know, if you're in Grand Rapids, where we are, it's, you know, Grand Rapids car accident attorney, your practice area page for car accidents might show up higher than your homepage does even. In that case, you really want that page to be a good converter.
Definitely. And, you know, for a lot of cases, we often encourage and try to link to practice area pages and blog posts as a best practice. And we try to do it pretty high up in the content because, for one thing, as we've talked about before and, you know, on this podcast and elsewhere, people just, most people aren't going to read through the entirety of your content, you know? So the idea is you know, hook them in the intro and give them some information that they need right up front. That's why you don't want to have, you know, excessively long rambling leads either to your blog post. But so, you know, you want to get them to maybe click through to a practice area page if they're not going to read the entire content. And, you know, if you've got a practice area page that's like two paragraphs and no strong CTA, you know, even if you get them to click through, ugh, missed opportunity, you know.
Yeah. There's also like a jarring disconnect between, like, say there's a really well-written blog post that they just came from and then they land on like a really weak practice area page. There's that really weird kind of jarring experience for users that says, man, am I even on the same website? Like, it looks the same, but the content, it's not the same.
Absolutely.
And that's going to create skepticism, and you don't want that either.
Yeah. I kind of think of, you know, that your blog content is like the furniture in the house of your website. And like, you don't want to have a house of empty rooms. You want to have good furniture, but like good furniture on a dirt lot is no, you know, or you know, dilapidated shack is big deal. I mean, no one's going to see it, you know, no one wants to go in there.
Yeah.
So you kind of touched on the idea of the marketing funnel, and I want to talk about that a little more. You know, that's a concept that I've had to learn about, internalize, not having, you know, being kind of a self-trained digital marketer. And, you know, probably some attorneys understand the concepts and some don't, but I think you went through it pretty well. So, you know, obviously the top of the funnel is, and first of all, we want to say too, that every person's journey through the funnel is kind of unique,
oh, yeah,
right? And you
definitely
hit on that. Some people are going to be pretty much ready to convert from the start, and some people are going to want to do a lot of research and a lot of reading and a lot of comparing before they're ready to convert.
Yeah, we've seen just this week, you know, I keep a running log for ourselves of all the conversions that we get and what the journey looks like, so we can kind of aggregate that data. And just this week we got two people who wanted us to, you know, call them back and pitch some services to them, and one of them came in through the blog, visited three or four blog pages, and then the about pages, and then filled out the form. And the other one just like landed on our homepage and filled out the form and was ready to go. And so some people, they're going to have, like you said, every journey is going to be unique. Some people are kind of poking around trying to figure things out, and some people have maybe already done a bunch of research, and then they're just looking for the details at the very end of the process.
Definitely. So in terms of understanding that funnel, you know, as you kind of hit on, you know, the top of the funnel is the least qualified leads. And then those are probably the people that are going to come in from blogs or from your social media content or things like that. And then as you move down the funnel, you know, the way to move people down the funnel, that is, you know, you want to establish trust and thought leadership, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's your core content we're talking about. Practice area pages are key. And also, you know, testimonials, reviews, case results, people are absolutely going to want to see that. And also, we've talked about this on the show before, but video is huge for establishing trust. You know, if people can see a video of you, they know what you're going to kind of be like in person. I mean, that's just a huge factor to establish trust. And also podcasts too, you know, podcasts is a great factor to build trust, you know, very intimate kind of feel to a podcast. So letting people listen to you, you know, you talk about legal issues on their headphones is a way to get to know them. So then continuing to move down the funnel, I think the next step is probably like a, you know, a valuable offer. Obviously most firms are going to offer a consultation, right? But not everyone who's ready, you know, is ready to convert on that level. So you're also going to want to have, you know, we always propose in-depth ebooks and white papers mm-hmm. are a great way. A lot of our clients have the kind of, you know, important content that people can use to figure out what to do after a car accident, for example, or how to solve their estate planning issues, you know, something that goes beyond the typical blog post, I think. And then, you know, as we talked about, everyone's kind of unique and the journey to the funnel for some people can be pretty long. So you're going to want to have content that's going to, you know, can kind of stay with them throughout that journey too. And that's where email marketing comes in as well. So if they fill out a form but aren't ready to convert or they just want more information, you know, you can kind of keep engaging with them for really as long as it takes. So I think between those types of content, does that pretty much cover most people's, most aspects of the funnel, you think?
Yeah. And I think this is where I think the funnel is sort of a bad metaphor.
Yeah, it is kind of nebulous.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a very good one because it's more of like Plinko, I guess, is what you have to kind of think of. Like,
it's not as neat to like, it doesn't make as great of like a little infographic.
Right.
That's totally true. Because even as we're talking about, I'm like, yeah, I guess that's it. But it's still, it's way more complicated than
that.
It's like
it definitely is. And you also, I mean, the thing about marketing, especially for attorneys, is you don't want to like exclude people. Just because they don't need you at the moment. And so, you know, if you think about like a car accident, you know, people are in a car accident on average of like three times in their life, like a reportable car accident.
Mm-hmm.
So like they may not need you or their case may not be great at first, like the first time they get in a car accident, but they might very well make their mind up if they are in a car accident later based on their interactions with you at this time around. We did an exercise with one of our clients a while back where we created a flow chart of the processes that were all in place, both in their office and on their website, sort of like just a big top level view of user journeys. And there were a lot of dead ends where balls got dropped that we could pick up on the marketing side and say, hey, you know, you pushed this person out of your internal system because their case wasn't qualified, but we can keep emailing to them. And so then that nurtures that person with newsletters or, you know, email content or whatever you want to do. And then next time they need your services, boom, you're there and you're ready. And, you know, for some types of practice areas, you're only going to see somebody once or twice in their life. But, you know, family law and estate law, you might see people quite often.
Yeah. I mean, they could come back every year.
Yeah.
Or more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or tax preparation and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are all practice areas that it really pays to not drop people off the system.
Yeah. And that's why automation is so important, right? Because we have some clients who are like, well, you know, we always want a personalized approach. You know, we don't handle a lot of cases and we don't like the feel of automation. But, you know, automation done right, first of all, doesn't have to be mechanical. There's lots of ways to customize your messaging and tailor it to people. And, you know, no matter how small you think your client base is and how intimate you like to be, you just can't stay in front of everyone all the time with in-person follow-up and phone calls. You know, it's just not feasible. And like you said, you never know when someone is going to need your help. And so, you know, that's why I think that's absolutely key for firms of any size, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, I mean, there's an old, you know, principle of hunting that like you set more than one trap, right? Like the more traps you set, the better chances you have of getting something. And it's the same with marketing. Like the more avenues that you have, the more processes that you have in place to pull in potential leads, the more actual leads you're going to end up getting to. So it is kind of like a numbers game on that front as well, where you want to find the strategies that are effective, but having different strategies is really important too. Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about, you know, some of the factors that we know affect conversion rates. And I know you've spent a lot of time working on this and thinking about this. In fact, you came in with a whole list that I didn't even know about. That's got, they've had a secret stash.
I have an Excel spreadsheet for my own personal.
So we'll get some facts from Dave's secret treasure trove today. And I've got ideas on my brain too, and we can talk about some of the best practices that we know. So especially, you know, this journey for us kind of started talking about blog content, and we were discussing, you know, how conversion oriented should it be and what does that mean really? So the question that we kind of started out wanting to answer was, you know, how sales heavy should blog content be? How many calls to action do you want to have? How many, you know, pitches to contact you and how often in the piece? And so where do you feel like we ended up with that, Dave?
I think it's, again, sort of a complicated scenario because this is all tied in very closely with website design. So in an ideal world, your website has a pretty prominent way for users to get in touch with you. So that's like displaying your phone number very on every page of your website and maybe potentially having a contact form, like at least in the footer or something. So there's always some way to contact you. I think the thrust of a blog post should be A, topically relevant to something that is one of your practice areas. You don't want super wildly tangential content that isn't going to apply to potential clients. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're, say you're doing car accident cases, you don't want to write about car washes, you know. It's just not really going to be something necessarily that's going to be applicable to someone who's been in a car accident or who's been injured in a car accident or whatever. So you want something that's really topically relevant. You want to focus most of your content on that. And I think you do want to push two things in a blog post. You want to push further down the funnel. Like you said, we've been trying really hard and very conscientious about internal linking structure so that we can move people from a blog post to a practice area page, which is, you know, inherently usually more high converting. And then we also like to pitch our clients and explain why they're qualified, usually in a blog post itself too, but not until the end, you know?
Right. And this kind of started because, you know, we were talking about some of these pieces that we're writing and we're like, well, you know, the typical practice is to put a CTA at the end, but then when you know that most people aren't going to read till the end, you know, does that make sense? But what we really kind of also settled on was, okay, but we're also, our mistake here is we're evaluating this content as plain text on the page,
right?
Which is, you know, your readers are never going to engage with it that way. And they shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't have to rely all on your in copy stuff. So, you know, your design should be working together with the copy. And I know for me that if I, you know, I read a lot of marketing copy, basically, you know, half of the research that we do that's marketing related is also marketing in itself because it's done by marketing companies, right? And if, you know, if I go to HubSpot or whatever, one of those, you know, any of those companies, we learn HubSpot's a great example. We go to them all the time. you know, their blog posts have CTAs, but if the first paragraph that I clicked on, the information I want was, here's why HubSpot is so great. You need to contact HubSpot. I'm gone. You know, there's no way I'm going to stick around for that content. But, and you know, this, I think that I tend to look right past this stuff. You know, it may be subliminally affecting me more than I know, but you know, those pages, when you, those blog articles, that is, when you look at them, they're filled with CTAs.
Yeah.
There's CTA buttons on the side and through, you know, in between the paragraphs. And I'm just scrolling right by them. I don't really notice them. But if I really decided I want to get in touch with them, almost anywhere on the page that you scroll, there'll be something in front of me that's going to allow me to do that. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where good design comes in. And a lot of times, you know, it's done in such a way that it's not obtrusive, but it is attention grabbing. And so, yeah, I mean, I think you always need to have CTAs in your copy and, you know, other ways for people to, you know, let them know that they, what you can do for them. They need to get in touch with you. But your copy shouldn't have to stand on its own that way. Your design should be a sales, you know, asset too, and it should be selling you all the way along.
Yeah, I think people sort of have this fundamental misconception about marketing and about how leads work, that like, you know, oh, if you get someone on the page, you'll be able to convince them that they need your services. And I just don't think that's true. I think there's going to be a very, very small number of people who that's true for. That maybe the best case scenario is that someone lands on a blog post or on a practice area page or whatever, and they're on the fence. And then what you do is you kind of say, hey, this is why you should contact us and not our competitors. But they're not going to be on the fence about whether they need a lawyer or not, usually. Or for us, they're not going to be on the fence about whether they need marketing services or not. And no amount of copy is going to convince somebody who doesn't need a service that they do.
Right.
And it's the same with products too. I mean, you know, people go bonkers talking about how important ad copy is and things like that to like sell products. And there is some, I think there's some merit to that, but I don't think you can convince someone who doesn't need it that they do need it necessarily. Mm-hmm. And so what you want, like you mentioned, is you want a really good integration of copy and design that doesn't discourage people who are just perusing. Like, you want them to have a pleasant experience. Even though they may never become a lead, you still want to have a good user experience for everybody who visits your site. But you want to make it very easy and seamless to contact you if they do kind of poke their eyes out of that banner blindness mode that you're talking about. Because I do the same thing where I just scroll past the ads or I don't even see the sidebar or whatever. And so you just want to make it easy when someone goes, oh, you know, maybe I do need help. And then they can, right wherever they are, there's a way for them to get in touch with you.
Right.
When they have that thought.
Yep. And, you know, that banner blindness, it almost sounds like a bad thing, but it's really not. I mean, if I go to a page and it's just aggressive, I'm just not going to engage with it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? So it's really, I mean, that to me is the test of good, you know, marketing content. And then if something piques my interest, you know, I'm going to become aware of that on the page. And the solution I need is going to be right in front of me, the way to contact them. Okay. So like you hit on, you know, not every lead is going to be a great one. Not every visitor to your website is going to be, you know, a potential lead. But that being said, and that's true, you know, no matter how great you make your design, your content, there are a lot of things you can do content design wise that will make it pretty sure that no one is going to get in touch with you, right? You can,
that is true.
You can't guarantee 100% conversions, but you can almost guarantee 0% if you do the wrong things.
Yeah.
So I wrote down a list of best practices. I kind of want to just talk through them a little bit. And I'm sure you have more thoughts too, Dave, so you can chime in whenever you, you know, feel something coming up. But some things that I, you know, that I've studied, you know, we've both studied over time, and things that I've, you know, written down and kept in mind that, you know, are known to, you know, optimize conversions. First of all, I think you want to make your content skim friendly. You know, we've talked about this. People don't read your whole piece. I mean, obviously, ideally, some people will, but in a perfect world, in the real world, like 1% of them are going to read your entire blog article. So that means you don't have a luxury of time to have, you know, a lot of long intros. You don't have luxury to, you know, talk about your firm first. You need to get to the point in your content, whatever it is. If, you know, if it's a blog article where you're pulling from search or a practice area page, you know, you need to put the content that, you know, the information that your readers are going to want to know right up at the top. You also need to have a great headline that gets people's attention. You know, it's going to make them click, make them stay on the page when they get there, because that's the first thing they're going to look at. Sometimes your headline might be different than what your search H1 tag is. And so also just a little plug for a past podcast episode. We did do an entire episode on headline writing tips. So if you want to check out that episode, it can get you in the kind of headspace to write a great headline. Also, you just want to have visual elements on the page. You know, a blog post without an image or a practice area page without some kind of image just tends to look dry and uninviting, I think. And, you know, we see the bounce rates being pretty high in those pages. One thing we've talked about that we always try to keep in mind, you know, on the web, it's easy to intimidate people with walls of text. So truncated paragraphs are really good. Bolded lists work really well. And, you know, breaking up your content into sections with, you know, well, you know, properly used header tags is really important, I think. So that's some things you can do to make your content, you know, kind of friendly for a wide variety of readers. Another thing we've tried to do, people like you kind of mentioned the Plinko machine idea, you know, people tend to bounce around between content a lot.
They do.
And so you kind of want to play to that because they're not going to change that behavior. That's how web users kind of behave, right? So one thing we've tried to do is we put kind of links to other related content throughout a lot of our pieces. And they kind of serve as like little CTAs, like not a call a CTA, but hey, check out some more content kind of CTA, right? Mm-hmm. Also, you kind of hit on this too, but anywhere on the page that you're end up scrolling, that you wind up on, there should be some way to contact you. You should have, you know, in your header or footer, phone numbers, emails. You should have CTA buttons throughout. If someone's, you know, decides they want to contact you and they don't see the info right away, that's, you know, pretty much a missed opportunity, right?
Yeah. Well, I think having it in predictable places, that's the really
predictable places.
That would be,
at least they shouldn't have to look for it.
Right.
If they have to look for it, they're not going to look for long.
Exactly. You know? Like if I'm going to contact somebody, the first thing I'm going to do is scroll to the very top of the page.
Yep.
You know, like, okay, oh, hey, I want to sign up for this or I want to call or whatever.
Might scroll to the bottom too. You should have it in both places. That's probably what I feel like I tend to do is go for the
bottom,
the footer.
Yeah, sure.
Another thing too, you know, we kind of mentioned that everyone's journey through the funnel is different and people want to interact with you in different ways. So you're going to want them to give them different options. You know, yeah, you obviously want to have your phone number, you want to have an email, and you want to have a contact form in case that's what works well for them. But also we've talked before about the value of live chat too. You know, some people, they'd like to engage with someone right away and live chat, you know, enables them to do that without picking up the phone if they're not a phone type of person. So that's a really strong tool. I know for me, you know, if I'm doing, going through the research of, you know, the in-depth research that's required to choose a lawyer, I'm probably going to want to, you know, call someone because I want to talk to them right away. But if not that, because, you know, for me, contact forms, I always have a sense that, like, is this really going anywhere? I don't know why. I just had too many contact forms, like, come back, nothing.
Right.
But live chat is another way to kind of, you know, people who need that immediacy, I think that's a really important tool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, finally, you want to have, you know, unique offers on your site. You know, we talked about, you know, when you want to move people further down into a deeper stage of the funnel, you know, you need to offer them something. And one thing that I've kind of talked about before, and that I think, especially some, you know, personal injury type firms or other practice areas that offer free consultations as a general rule need to think about, is that a free consultation is, you know, it's a really valuable thing. Obviously you're giving someone a half hour of your time and expertise, you know, pretty much at no risk. It's great, but it's not a unique value proposition. Every other firm they look at is going to be offering that. So you got to look past that and say, okay, what else do we have to offer? I think that's where some of those in-depth assets like ebooks and white papers come in. And, you know, you can also get creative. There's other things you can offer people. One law firm that I read about increased their conversion rates a lot by offering people a car accident kind of emergency kit. I think they gave them like, cool, you know, like a little mini flashlight and like a little checklist and some other things like that. And so, you know, you think about those kind of things, like what could you do for your clients or potential clients that could help them, that, you know, is different from what other firms are offering them? I think that's important to think about.
A checklist is a really interesting idea. And we've done that with one of our attorneys too, where we had a downloadable checklist and it's just something you could laminate and toss in your glove box. You know, and they may not use it right away, but they might use it down the road. And that's the kind of stuff that's really helpful. Another thing that we didn't mention was like client stories. Like if you can tell the story of a successful case that you've handled, and you cannot make it all about you, but you make it all about the person that you helped, then people are going to be able to read that and see that and understand more of how your process works and how in tune you are with your clients. And that content does extremely well.
I think that makes a lot of sense because, you know, I think people, the unknown gives them a lot of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't worked with a lawyer before, it's kind of like, what is it going to be like? Is it going to be like going to the doctor or like, right, you know, am I going to have to go through a lot of people, be in a waiting room for half an hour and, you know, what's it going to be like? Do I have to go to court? They're going to have a lot of questions. So just showing them what a client journey is like and, you know, how these successful clients feel, which in a lot of cases, you know, it's life-changing for people. Mm-hmm. And I think that goes a long way toward inspiring that confidence that you need to get conversions.
Yeah, for sure.
Finally, the other thing that I had in mind I want to talk about is, you know, when you are looking for conversions, in particular, if you're talking about form fills, you need to examine what are you asking for. We know from experience, has been shown again and again, the more information you ask for, the less, fewer form fills you're going to get. Mm-hmm. So does your contact form, you know, take a look at it. Obviously you need something from them. You know, you can't have them just fill out like something anonymous or just their email address. You want to know their name, phone number, probably their email. But even then, you know, maybe you only need one of those too. And what else are you asking for? You know, are you asking them to leave an explanation or a note? And is that non-optional? Because if so, you know, that's going to crush your conversion rates basically.
Yeah.
Every non-essential piece of information is going to hurt you. So I think you need to take a look at those forms and ask, you know, are you asking for the bare minimum that you can use to follow up with this person and get in touch with them and turn them into, you know, a more qualified lead or a client?
Yeah, forms are crucial, honestly. And you want to think about the value you're providing in a form versus the return that they're getting. So, or what, you know, what the return on what you're asking for. So like if you're offering a newsletter that gets sent out via email, like an email newsletter, don't ask for people's name. Just ask for the email and call it good, and don't harass them because they don't want that, right? Yeah, if they're signing up for a newsletter, that's all they want. They just want your newsletter. They don't want you to call them. It's the same thing with like, you know, an email campaign or even to some extent probably downloads. Don't ask for more than you need. Are you going to follow up with everybody who downloads your ebook? You're probably not going to do that. You might, you know, if you've got a really great like lead gen team or lead nurturing team at your law firm, that's awesome. You might follow up with every person who downloads something and say, hey, did you get this? Can we help you with anything else? That's cool. You can also do that through automation just as easily. So no one has to touch anything. And then if someone does need help, they'll reply straight to your inbox. And then, yeah, with the contact form, if someone's requesting a free consultation, what do you need to get back in touch with them? Maybe it's just their name and their email, and then you can schedule an appointment that way. Make the phone number optional. Don't make it required. And you'll get more people coming in and filling out that form.
Right. And you know, the phone number is like, it's kind of a killer in terms of conversion rates. And it's like, you can understand why. You know, if I give someone my email, I can always just filter out their messages if I end up not liking them. But
right.
You know, giving someone your phone number requires a lot of trust. Mm-hmm. And that's a big ask from someone.
It is.
So it can be valuable, but you know, you need to balance that against the fact that a lot of people aren't going to be willing.
Yeah, 48% is the decrease in conversions if you require a phone number.
Yeah.
And have a phone number field. So watch out. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you would get 100 people, asking for a phone number means you're only going to get 50.
Yeah.
So think very carefully before you make that something that you're asking people for.
Yep. And finally, the other thing that I came up with that can easily affect your conversion rates is, you know, your loading speed of your pages. Obviously, if your page seems, you know, it just... If your page is slow to load and buggy, that just makes your entire website and by extension your brand and your firm look bad. Mm-hmm. And another thing that's key is responsive design, which means, you know, being friendly to mobile and tablets and all sorts of things, because we talked about how important design was. And, you know, if your site isn't mobile optimized, I mean, that design can go out the window if someone's using the wrong type of device, you know. So all your hard work there could be for naught if your site isn't designed to work across a wide variety of platforms mm-hmm. and devices. Okay. Anything else you wanted to bring up, Dave, in terms of conversion optimizing tips? I know you've got a
I mean, there's so much, but
give us a few nuggets out of here.
Okay. Sidebar is a good example, right? Evaluating whether you need a sidebar. There was a case study where removing the sidebar actually increased conversions by 71%.
Really?
Yeah. And you sort of think about that a little bit and you think, okay, why on earth would that happen? Because there's like a form in the sidebar and there's links in the sidebar. Like that should increase conversions, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, there's also that banner blindness that we all have. Like I don't even see a sidebar most of the time. And the other thing is you're also pulling people away into areas of your site that maybe aren't conversion friendly by having a sidebar. So like, are they going to fill that form out on the sidebar? Probably not. We don't get a lot of sidebar form fills. Are they going to click on the links? Possibly. But if they're links to other blog posts, those are not high converting. You know, you're not pushing people to the practice area
pages.
Yeah. And so what you know, it's almost like that sort of, you know, dedicated landing page theory that you don't want to have tons of outbound links to all kinds of places on your site when you just want them to do this one thing. And so on a blog post, you do just kind of want them to do this one thing. You want them to either move down the funnel or take some other action. You don't want people just like floating around on your site doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can see how that might actually make a lot of sense for some firms to just boom, remove the sidebar. You might actually increase your conversions by a ton because people land on the page and they just do what you're trying to get them to do on that page. Yeah, so that was kind of an interesting one.
Yeah, that is very interesting.
Yep. Here's one. Using the word free still works.
Really? Okay.
Yep. So like using the word free still increases conversions by 28%. over not using the word free. So I think you had a really good point that like having a free consultation isn't like a distinguishing factor, but you should mention it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, because you have to mention it because maybe you're the first PI attorney that someone has looked at and they don't know that free consultations are a thing in the field. And it's a huge value proposition. It's just not necessarily a unique one.
Right. Exactly. Yep. So yeah, don't be afraid of using the word free. I know some attorneys, you know, we've talked to attorneys cause they like, don't want to be pushy about stuff like that. Or like they don't want to sound too markety. Mm-hmm. But you know, if you offer a free consultation, you're offering that, you know, you don't have to be like, it's free, call now, do this, you know, like it's wacky waving inflatable arm tube man type, thing, but definitely mention it, you know, you shouldn't like shortchange yourself just because you feel like it's a little too salesy.
Yeah, definitely not. I mean, you have to sell a little bit, you know, but sales is part of, you get in front of clients and you are selling yourself. Mm-hmm. And this is, you got to think of your digital marketing as an extension of that, right?
Definitely. Yep.
I guess I would say too, just maybe to wrap up, unless you have anything else, key that you want to bring up, Dave.
I mean, the only thing, would be to think about your CTAs, because CTAs can make a huge difference. Mm-hmm. And make sure that your CTAs are very clear about what's happening next. So one case study they had a create my account button, and then they had a create my account and get started button. And the create my account and get started button had 32% higher conversions.
Really? Okay. Yeah. Because people just kind of understood that there was the beginning of a process. They knew what they're going to be doing once they clicked on that.
Exactly.
Button.
Like it was a forward, there's forward momentum there. Right. Uh-huh. So like create your account is just like a kind of a passive thing. Like, oh good, it's set up now. But like, what does that allow you to do?
Yeah.
Like create your account and get started says, oh, I'm going to create my account and I'm going to get moving on whatever it is that I was creating my account for in the first place.
Right. Because creating accounts just in, you know, intermediate people only do that because they want to get somewhere. They
get somewhere. Exactly.
Care about creating an account otherwise. Yeah.
And that also points to the fact that, like, you know, think about your copy. We mention this all the time, of course, but, like, think about your copy. And people are like, oh, long copy is bad. But that's not true. Descriptive copy is good. Sometimes you can have really descriptive copy that's short. Other times you can have really descriptive copy that's long, but it's more effective. Like, that example is almost twice as long, but it does almost twice as good.
Right. So, and I think it comes down again to clearing up people's uncertainty.
You know, yeah, about,
I
for
mean,
sure.
The more you can do that, let people know what to expect. I think that's a benefit. And if it requires a little more description, then go for it.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, kind of one thing that we have to wrap up with is, you know, all of these are best practices and good tips to think about. But I think no best practice or list of tips is a substitute for testing your results, right? Mm-hmm. And comparing and tweaking and testing the tweaks. So for instance, you talked about, you know, eliminating the sidebar, like, yeah, that might work for some pages. It might work for some websites. On other websites, maybe the sidebar is serving an important function and it converts really well because of the design. So definitely not, you know, a blanket tip to remove the sidebars. It's something you want to consider. And the best way to do that, I think, is by testing results. And if you can, A-B testing, mm-hmm. you know, having a version of the page that is, you know, with a sidebar and without, and some people go to the one and the other and you compare the results, or A-B testing by doing one, then the other, and seeing what the results are over time. So either way, you know, I mean, the data will tell the tale. And I think that's important for people to remember. You know, it's going to be somewhat, dependent on your audience, you know, the type of people that engage with your site, your practice areas, all sorts of things, really. So there's no substitute for just doing that legwork of gathering the analytics and looking at them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just keeping tabs on how things are going, and they can change too.
That's true too. Yeah, I mean, they can definitely change. You know, if you overhaul your website or change something about your website, it can affect other things that you're not even cognizant of. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. I think you know, we could go for a long time as we could. All these topics,
but
I think we've probably got to wrap up and let people get on with their holidays. So thanks for coming in and talking to us, Dave. We always appreciate it.
Yeah. No, it's been great. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you. All right. That's it for this week's episode and for the first year of Legal Marketing Radio. I just want to thank you for tuning in and thank everyone on the Fleur team for all the support and wonderful discussions we had this year. Don't forget to check back in 2 weeks for our first episode of the new year featuring a very special guest. And as always, if you've got a question or a suggestion for the podcast, just send an email to radio@lafleur.marketing. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you in 2018 on Legal Marketing Radio from LaFleur.